Thank you for the introduction. And today I'm going to present a novel optical architecture that supports widespread high bandwidth traffic in data center networks. And this is a joint work from both academia and industry and from both Hong Kong and the US. The port count of data center fabric is growing quickly with multiple layers of electrical switching added on top. And it has become quite costly to scale further. There has been continuous efforts in using optical networking in data center networks because of its low cost, low power consumption at high link speeds, and low wiring complexity. In the meantime, the data center traffic demand is also growing rapidly. As reported by Google, there has been 50 times growth in the data center traffic demand in the past 6 years. So the question for how to design an optical data center fabric is that how do we design a fabric that enables high bisection bandwidth? At first glance, this challenge may seem trivial, as the optical network are known to provide high bandwidth one-to-one links. But another characteristic of data center traffic is that it is widespread. We can see from this trace from the Microsoft data center network, the y-axis are the source racks, and the x-axis are the destination racks. And the dots indicate the frequency of a communication between the source and destination pair. We can see that each source can send to multiple other racks, and each destination can also receive from multiple other racks. And this is also true in other data centers, for example, Facebook and Tencent. And we have described the traces of their data center traffic in our paper. This poses a challenge for the data center optical fabric. That is, how do we support both high bandwidth and widespread traffic? Previous works in optical networking in data centers have been trying to reuse the optical circuits in a time dimension to satisfy the widespread traffic demands. Let's see a toy example of how it works. Let's say we have a traffic demand matrix like this. And it can be decomposed into multiple permutation matrices that can be satisfied with arrangement of one-to-one circuits, one-to-one optical circuits. We can see that by reusing the circuits temporally, the traffic demand matrix can be satisfied over a longer time period. So using prior works, if a source wants to talk to multiple racks, multiple destinations, it will need to wait for multiple scheduling rounds to complete this one-to-many communication. In contrast to the previous works, we approach this problem of providing high bandwidth and widespread connectivity in a spatial dimension. And instead of reusing the circuits temporally, we design megaswitch, which satisfy a widespread demand simultaneously by reusing the wavelengths in a spatial domain. Megaswitch provisions multiple parallel circuits on different fibers using different wavelengths so that every widespread traffic demand can be satisfied at the same time. So we will start to explain how Megaswitch works, but we'll start with the data plane design. And we will explain how do we enable the spatial reuse of wavelengths and our prototype implementation. We first describe the optical components used in Megaswitch. The first one is the multiplexer, which takes k input wavelengths and output a fiber that contains these k wavelengths. The opposite of the multiplexer is a demultiplexer, which will take one input fiber of k wavelengths and output these k wavelengths to its output ports. The most important component of Megaswitch is the wavelength selective switch, WSS. WSS takes W input fibers and select the wavelengths from these fibers and output a fiber containing those selected wavelengths. In this example, selecting from all four input fibers will enable a 4-to-1 communication. WSS can select any non-interfering subset from the input wavelengths, input fibers. For example, it can take three wavelengths from fiber 1 and one wavelength from fiber 3, and this enables a 2-to-1 communication. So knowing how the optical components work, we start from the sending aspect of Megaswitch. Each electrical packet switch, the EPS, has k transceivers. And these transceivers each have a different wavelength to send. And in this case, we have four transceivers. the wavelengths are multiplexed onto a single fiber in the optical wavelength switch, OWS, and amplified with one stage of optical amplifier. The fiber from node 1 will travel to all the other nodes using the passive routing fabric, the PRF. In each node, the signal from node 1 is split down to the WSS and then demultiplexed to the local electrical switch. Now, let's add another sender to the mega switch ring. The signal from node 2 travels through all the other nodes in the same way. And now, at node 3, the WSS is now received from all the other two nodes on the ring, and the WSS of node 3 can now select four wavelengths from a total of eight wavelengths on these two fibers. And then the wavelengths are demultiplexed into the transceivers on the local rack of node 3. Now, we can finish the three-node example with megaswitch by adding the sending components of node 3. Now, each node can send on k wavelengths, and these wavelengths can be received on any node on this multi-fiber ring, which enables a widespread all-to-all connectivity simultaneously. We have proven the rangeably non-blocking property of megaswitch in our paper. This three-node example has 12 ports, and the key parameter of megaswitch scalability are as follows. The port count of WSS is W, and in this case, it's 2. W actually determines the number of nodes on the ring, N. Each node can receive from W other nodes, so the maximum number of nodes on the ring is W plus 1. Each fiber can carry K wavelengths, which means that each electrical switch can also send using K wavelengths. So the total port count of megaswitch is N times K. Using existing technology, we projected that the port count can go up to 6,000 ports, more than 6,000 ports. To better understand how megaswitch works, we now look at a unicast example. In this example, host 1 tries to communicate with host 12. To do this, the control plane first selects the blue wavelengths as the wavelengths for this multicast. We then configure the WSS in node 3 to select the blue wavelengths on the fiber from node 1. In the meantime, we can set up the routing in both packet switches, and we can see that step 2 and 3 can be done in parallel. After this, the unicast from host 1 to host 12 is established. Multicast on megaswitch is very natural to do because every signal is broadcast to every node. In this multicast example, every receiving node can just select from the fiber and wavelength that carries the multicast traffic, which is the red wavelength on the fiber from node 1. With this, we can establish a multicast from host 1 to host 5, 6, 7, and 10. So this is basically how the data plane on megaswitch works. And the megaswitch can be constructed using commercially available components. And we have, in fact, implemented a prototype OWS plus PRF box. And it can fit into existing data center racks. Each box are designed to take 16 wavelengths and can be connected into a ring using the inter-OWS ports. We use a Raspberry Pi in each box as the controller. So using five of these boxes, we implemented a prototype with 40 ports. We used two electrical 10G switches in this prototype, and we divide the physical electrical switch into five virtual packet switches using VLANs, so that we have in total five nodes, and each node is a OWS EPS pair, and we have eight wavelengths per node. There's some physical limitations. Ideally, we want megaswitch to have high port count and low WSS switching speed. But in the process of implementing the prototype, we found that we cannot achieve both at the same time. And the lowest switching latency reported in the data center optical networking is Modia, which has demonstrated a switching latency of microseconds using the DLP technology. However, in the implementation of our prototype, we find out that WSS with DLP technology is not actually scalable. Beyond 8 ports, we cannot maintain the 11 microsecond switching delay. Megaswitch requires a large WSS port count to scale to more ports. And in this prototype, we choose to use the liquid crystal technology. And the measured switching latency of the prototype WSS is about 3 milliseconds. We believe this is a hard limit, and although the optical networking community are still working on it, in the meantime, this switching latency of milliseconds is still too long for the latency-sensitive applications. So to handle this, we now describe a control plane mechanism to mitigate the negative impact of this switching latency. We'll mainly talk about base mesh. And like previous works, we assume a centralized controller managing both the electrical switches and the optical ones. When the demand is stable, we have proven that a megaswitch can provide full bisection bandwidth. But when the traffic matrix is changing quickly on the tens of millisecond scale, or when the traffic matrix is estimated incorrectly, in the worst case, two nodes with communication demands might be cut off completely. To avoid these situations, we design base mesh, which is a flexible overlay network on megaswitch to provide consistent connectivity between all the nodes, so that low latency traffic will not suffer from the switching latency. The idea of base mesh is actually simple. Each node will dedicate B wavelengths to construct overlay network on the fully connected fiber mesh of megaswitch. So of course we will learn from the overlay networking and DHT literature, and we choose to use the symphony topology because of two reasons. First, the number of base mesh wavelengths per node B, or using DHT literature, the routing table size. We want it to be adjustable so that the data center operators can adjust for different degrees of traffic volatility. And second, we want guaranteed average latency for packet delivery. Let's go through a concrete example of how the base mesh on a six-node ring works. When B equals to 1, the base mesh is just a ring, and the packet on this ring can take, on average, 2.5 hops to reach its destination. For example, a packet from node 1 will take 4 hops to reach node 3. And if we increase the base mesh capacity to 3, then the average hop count will drop to 1.4, and now it takes 2 hops from node 1 to reach node 3. And finally, if B is 5, the base mesh is basically a fully connected mesh network, and with every pair of network connected using a direct wavelength. So setting B to W, and in this case 5, will provide a uniform cross-rack latency for the latency-sensitive applications. Finally, we will try to evaluate the megaswitch prototype with benchmarks and performance measurements from real application deployments on megaswitch. The evaluation is done on the same 40-board testbed, and the optical wavelength switches and electrical packet switches are controlled using out-of-band control network. And for all the testbed experiments, we assume the traffic demand matrix are known beforehand. First, we look at all-to-all communication pattern called the host level stride. In this pattern, every 10 seconds, one wavelength will change per rack. We can see that when the circuit is stable, megaswitch can provide a full bisection bandwidth for all the ports in this, for all the hosts in this all-to-all communication pattern. And every 10 seconds, wavelengths will change, causing a throughput drop of 50 gigabit per second. And we measured the duration of this drop, which is the reconfiguration latency of megaswitch, and it is about 20 milliseconds in total. And overall, we can say that megaswitch can achieve full bisection bandwidth when the circuit is stable. Next, we will look at a real application deployments on megaswitch, and first, a latency-sensitive application, Redis, which is an in-memory object store. In this experiment, we will initiate 1 million get set requests from all the nodes to a server in node 1. We will vary the number of base mesh wavelengths and measure the average query completion time. When B equals to 1, the base mesh is a ring, and when B equals to 4, the base mesh is a full mesh. For node 1, the query will complete within the same rack, resulting in a really low query completion latency. But for node 2, when base mesh has only one wavelength, the query from node 2 will traverse four other nodes before reaching its destination, resulting in a really long latency. But we can see that with more wavelengths in the base mesh, the latency can be reduced down to 2, which is basically come only from the local Tor switch and the destination Tor switch. This is the same for all the other nodes. That's why with a fully connected base mesh, we can achieve uniform latency for all the cross-rack queries. We also deploy Spark 1.4 on our prototype and run a few parallel computing applications. In each experiment, we first connect the servers to a single Tor switch and run the applications and measure the per-server pair bandwidth demand. We then connect the servers back to Megaswitch and aggregate the demands into 1 second period demand matrices. Using these demand matrices, we can then configure the wavelength assignment algorithm on Megaswitch and assign the wavelengths. In fact, we find out that the demand of Spark applications tends to be quite stable in terms of traffic volatility. And during the application runtime, less than 10 reconfigurations are required. We measured the job completion time as an end-to-end metric that shows how Megaswitch impacts the application performance. We can see that from the flow job completion time of different applications, Megaswitch has really similar performance compared to the optimal scenario where all the servers are located within the same rack. In summary, Megaswitch reused the wavelengths spatially and provides full isolation bandwidth for all the ports. And secondly, we designed base mesh to provide consistent connectivity for latency-sensitive applications. Finally, we built a 40-port prototype with 5 nodes on the ring and deployed and run real applications on it. To sum up, Megaswitch is an optical design that supports widespread high bandwidth traffic patterns in today's production data centers. For more on the fault tolerance, delay measurements, power budgets, and many more, please refer to our paper for more details. And finally, we would like to invite you to test your innovative ideas for NSDI 18 in a new workshop, APNet, the first Asia-Pacific workshop on networking. And the deadline is 3 weeks away. Thank you. I'm glad to take any questions.
Questions?
Hi, I'm Mania Gobade from MSR. This is a really cool work. I especially like that you actually built a Megaswitch prototype. I wonder if the port count limitation that you mentioned, around 6,000 ports, is that a hard limit, or can we push that to more?
Yes, we are able to push it to more, but that depends on the technology we use. Actually, let me see. Yeah. This page, right? So actually, the port count of Megaswitch is depends on both two parameters, N and K, right? But this, so we can try to increase N to the scale of K. K is the number of wavelengths per fiber, and it's usually in the hundreds. And N is the port count of the WSS, which is usually in the tens. We can use an AWGR matrix to basically a K by K matrix to do the same thing as the current receiving components, which is a combination of the WSS.
Right, but
and
it feels like 6,000 is kind of almost about it. I mean, how do you envision it to scale to 100,000?
It is possible to scale to 100,000. In the OWS that we implemented, we actually can support the scaling from two dimensions. Right now, we only have a ring on one dimension. But if we can enable a torus on two dimensions, then we can have n squared times k scalability. And using that scalability, we can achieve the port count that you just mentioned.
So you envision 100,000 conceivable.
It is possible, yeah.
Thanks.
But there's difficulties to do that.
Hi, Robin Guinness from UC San Diego. I really like this work, and I particularly like that you not only built this, but you actually ran real applications on it and measured completion times comparable to traditional tours.
Yep.
Particularly, though, have you looked at running multiple applications simultaneously and how that would perhaps interact with something with like demand collection for the controller in particular? It's a kind of difficult, I've seen in previous papers, to collect demand and distinguish between different applications running perhaps in the same rack or across multiple racks in the data center and how that would impact the controller.
Yeah, thank you. This is a really important question. That is, how do we predict the traffic demands from parallel computing applications? And we actually have some measurement results, but we didn't show, we have it in the backup slides, actually. This is from our previous work in Flow Profit in ICDCS 15. And this actually, we implemented a flow prediction framework that can predict the traffic demand in ahead of time. And this actually shows the lead time of predicting a Spark application. We have found out that the lead time of predicting a Spark traffic can be hundreds of milliseconds. And actually, the lead time for Hadoop traffic can be in the 10 seconds. So with this lead time, we can actually do very accurate traffic prediction and assign the wavelengths before the traffic actually happens. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Last question.
Hi, Max Millett, UCSD. Yeah. Yeah, great work. I just had a question. You didn't talk about it in the talk. Did you do any cost modeling comparing your system to an electrical network?
In terms of?
Component cost.
Yes, we have some cost comparisons, but it is not using price, but the complexity of the structure. It is actually very difficult to estimate the optical component because, for example, the PRF in our design, we can max produce it and push the cost down to the circuit boards, the cost of circuit boards. So we just do a cost comparison based on the complexity of optical structures. In terms of electrical fabric, here the major cost will be the transceivers, because in different layers of the electrical topology, we have multiple layers, and between the layers we have many transceivers. And the cost comparison, in terms of cost, we will save a lot of cost in that aspect because we only have one layer of transceivers.
Right, but your DWDM transceivers are more expensive maybe than the...
This is actually another point that I didn't mention in the talk. We are using DWDM transceivers, and DWDM transceivers are usually used for the metro area connections. And we choose that in our prototype not because we want that reach in data centers. We actually really want a shorter reach DWDM transceiver, but we cannot find it. And we believe that if we relax the design requirements on the DWDM transceivers, we can also push this cost down, the transceiver cost down.
All right. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Li Chen.
Thank you.